All of my daughters were my favorite daughters because they were. See, all of you are my favorite students. See, it's the blessing that you can love and thank the Lord. Okay, I got to get back to the quiz. Saul and the witch are in what chapter? Yeah, who said that? 1 Samuel 28. 1 Samuel 28, Saul and the witch. Now, this is the hardest one. There's only one answer for this, and you guys struggle with this. Think about it. Not in your language. In English, how long does it take to read the whole Bible? In English, that's all I'm asking is if you listened to that point. So there's going to be a question, how long does it take to read the whole Bible? And you have to say 72 hours. Okay, let's say it out loud. How long does it take to read the whole Bible? 72 hours. And that's for a sixth grader. Out loud. See, the Bible isn't that long. And then wow, honey. Have you read Haggai, 1st and 2nd Samuel? So only 1st, 2nd Samuel, not Haggai. And have you done the devotional project? Okay, so there you go. Wonderful, my favorite student. Anybody else have? So can you fix that for me, the Haggai part? You don't have to read Haggai for this class. Anybody else have a project you want to turn in to Bonnie? And she'll note those, correct those, and get those back to you. Let's open in our Bibles to 2 Samuel 22. Now, I want to show you something. 2 Samuel 22 is David giving the kind of farewell. It's a long farewell, and he says in verse 22, 2 Samuel 22:1, then David spoke to the Lord the words of this song. Now, the reason I want you to think about that is that's what the Psalms were. David speaking to the Lord the words of a song. And worship, true worship, is to the Lord. Now be careful, because nowadays in many churches, worship is to the crowd. And they're trying to get the crowd, you know, kind of worked up and excited. And it's almost become a performance. I'm talking about contemporary worship. The idea is you have a big group of people and you've got a lot of gifted musicians and they learn to, what we call in English, play to the crowd and try and get the crowd worked up. Be careful. Worship is supposed to be an offering to God. And so it's very important. Do you know what I do when I'm out in a church service, before I speak at a church? I watch the musicians. And there's usually one over there on the keyboard, and maybe there's one on the piano, and there are several that are on the bass guitars, and there's the percussionist, and then there are the different ones holding their microphones or have a microphone stand that are singing. And what I look at is, are all of them singing to the Lord? Now, usually the ones in front are leading, so they're singing. But often what you see is all the people that are doing all the other instruments are not singing. Now, I know it's probably hard to sing and play. I'm not a musician. Who's a guitarist here? Who plays the guitar? Anybody? Is it hard to play and sing at the same time? Depends on what kind of guitar it is. So, see, I'm not a musician, but what's interesting is, I've noticed, even when they're not doing anything, they're not, you know, doing the little drum you sit on or playing, they're not singing. And I thought, how can you be a worship leader and not be offering your worship to the Lord? David, look what it says in verse 1. Spoke to the Lord the words of this song on the day when the Lord delivered him from the hands of all of his enemies and from the hand of Saul. Now, keep your finger there and turn back to Psalm 18. Okay? And look what Psalm 18 says in the first verse of the Hebrew. Now, all of you that have the superscript are going to notice that 2 Samuel 22, verse 1 is what is in the superscript. Remember that little writing ahead of the psalm? You remember I talked to you about that? Look at what it says in Psalm 18. If you only have the English, it says, I will love you, O Lord, my strength. How many of you, that's all you have in Psalm 18 to start it? Hold your hand up. Okay, how many of you have something before that that says, to the chief musician, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spoke to the Lord the words of this song in the day the Lord delivered him? How many of you have that? Do you notice the first verse is captured here in 2 Samuel, but in many English translations, you notice it's not. Did you catch that? Can any of you notice that? You see, that's why this actually was the very first verse of the Hebrew psalm. But for some reason, the publishers didn't know what to do with it. So sometimes they put it in the footnotes, sometimes they put it in little small print, and sometimes they don't put it anywhere. But I wanted you to see that. Now, what are we looking at in 2 Samuel 22? I call it embracing God. As we open to the words that you're going to see in 2 Samuel 22, we're entering the last days of David's life. Now, nobody else has more pages about them in the Bible, humanly speaking, than David. David is God's object lesson to every one of us. He's God's object lesson on how to be a great man, a young person, how to be a great career person that's successful, how to be a great leader, how to be a great old person. Every era of life, there's writing about him. Also, how to do well when everything's going well, and how to please the Lord when you're suffering. See, everything is covered in David's life. In the 50 verse, this is David's longest psalm. Do you catch that? Psalm 18, which is also recorded in 2 Samuel 22, is the most of all the songs David sang to the Lord. This one is really special. Remember, Psalm 3 is the first that is recorded as being by David. But Psalm 18 is the longest and the most that David says. The words of this psalm are recorded in God's Word twice. Twice. That's significant. It's like God thought it was so important that he wanted it emphasized. It's like doubly saying that David wanted to end well for the Lord. Now let's just look at David's life. This week started going through David's life with David in Ziklag. I showed it to you on the map, losing everything, but God. And that's a great way to think about David's life. God was the only thing he couldn't lose. Lost his family, he lost his children, he lost his wives, he lost his possessions, he lost his flocks, everything. Then we saw how David was commanded by God to copy, as he became king, to copy those first 192 pages, the Pentateuch, the first five books. And he did it. And he carried it with him. And we see that showing up in so many of his psalms. Then, when David was defeated, 2 Samuel 11, when David was chastened in 2 Samuel 12, when David was forgiven, and remember the always remember there's three psalms with David's sin and you know, the Lord's chastisement and his repentance, 32, 38, 51. Then the consequences, we see them played out in David's life. Then we saw, remember the map I had right here on the blackboard of Absalom coming with the army, driving David out, and David was able to sleep, sleeping grace. And then we looked at his lonely times, but now look at the difference between what it says in 2 Samuel 22. See if you guys can figure out there's one line different and it happens to be the first line. So everybody look at Psalm 18, and someone out loud tell me, what do you see different between Psalm 18 and 2 Samuel 22? There's one line different. Do you see it? Ike, say it louder. Did you all notice that? What is the opening of Psalm 18? What's the first line say? All of you have it, right? Say it out loud together. I love you. Oh, there we go. They said it for us. Did you know that's the only place in the Bible where that is recorded of someone saying that to the Lord in that way? Where else does it say that in the Bible? Oh, Peter says, Lord, you know I love you. After Jesus said, feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my sheep. And Peter felt bad and said, Lord, you know I love you. There's nowhere else in the Bible where someone does this and lifts their heart and says, I love you, O Lord. And it's just unbelievably. I mean, this is David's heart. This is the most overt. That's an English word that means everybody can see it. This is the most expressive of any Bible writer to the Lord. Isn't that amazing? And that's what we're looking at. Loving God. Okay. Basically, 2 Samuel 22 and Psalm 18 is us watching how David learned to see all of his life from God's perspective. And before I go too far into it, let me just show you the first three verses. Look at Psalm 18. The first three verses, David says, God is the greatest attraction to me. I love you, Lord, with all my strength. Then starting in verse 4, he starts talking about how desperate his life is. Look what it says in verse 4. The pangs of death surrounded me. Then you get to verse 7, and what he says is, but your power is great. He talks about the Lord shaking the earth and the smoke from his nostrils. What he's talking about there in Psalm 18 is God's so powerful. Then in verse 16, look what he says. He, that's the Lord, sent from above. He took me. He drew me. What he's saying is, it's the Lord who delivered me. And that's really a beautiful part of this psalm. Then look at verse 25, because in verse 25, what David emphasizes, starting in verse 25, is God's justice. And look at verse 25. With the merciful, you will show yourself merciful. With the blameless, you will show yourself blameless. And what he's saying is, everything God does is just. Just means it's perfectly, righteously correct. And what David says, God, when I was sinning and you squashed me, you were perfectly just. When I was seeking Bathsheba and you chastened me, you were perfectly right. And Lord, when I went out and fought the enemies of God and you defeated them, you were right. What David is saying is, both the good things and the bad things in life, God does them right. Now keep going down to verse 30. As for God, his way is perfect. God reveals himself to everybody who trusts him. You notice what it says? God's way is perfect. And, keep reading verse 30, the word of the Lord is proven. He is a shield to all who trust him. Basically, what David is saying there is that God reveals himself to us if we'll trust him and follow him. Look at verse 37. David says this, I have pursued my enemies and overtaken them. And then look at verse 46. That means that God conquered all of his enemies. But verse 46 is kind of like the climax. Psalm 18:46. The Lord lives. Blessed be my rock. Now, wait a minute. Pause. Look up from your Bibles and think about this. Do you see what's different about David? Most people would say the Lord is a rock, or the Lord is the rock. What did David say? What word is in there? My God. Did you catch that? Did you catch the my part? Did you know some people keep God almost at a distance? The Lord, the God, the Great One, the Good Shepherd. Do you know what David said? My God, my rock. my good shepherd. Do you see how in verse 46, God is worthy of His personal adoration and praise? Don't merely speak of God out there kind of as He's out there, He's great. Do what David did and personalize it and say, He is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God in whom I trust. See the personalized? It's almost like I was telling the SMS students, wherever they are, upstairs, that when couples in their marriages have struggles, you know, Christian couples have struggles in their marriages, and so do unsaved people. One of the big struggles is it's hard for men to say things out loud. They don't like to, you know, it's kind of like a sign of weakness for a man to say, "Oh, honey, I love you. You are wonderful. You're beautiful. You are the girl of my dreams. You are distracting. It's hard to teach class with you in the back." You know what I mean? So what happens is men have marriage problems, and the wife thinks their husband doesn't love them anymore. And so the wife will bring them into my office when I was a pastor, and they'd say, "My husband doesn't love me." And I'd say, "Why do you think that?" And she says, "He won't say it." And I'll say, "Tell her." And the husband always does the same thing. The husband will look at me and say, "She knows I love her." I said, "No, no, say it. No, she knows I love her." And see, you have to say it out loud. David says it out loud. "I love you, O Lord." Psalm 18:1. "I love you, O Lord. You're my Lord." That's what's amazing. Okay, let's talk about David's life. We've been walking through his life for hours in many chapters, but this is a summary of David's whole life that shows up in this psalm. Number one, from his lonely childhood and struggling years, he said, "I sought the Lord." From his triumphs in the battlefield, they're all here. It says in Psalm 18, the little superscript, "When the Lord delivered him from all the hand of all of his enemies." So through all those triumphs, he said, "I love the Lord." Through the consequence years, when four of his sons die, when four huge national disasters take place, during those eight horrible times, David said, "I love you." Basically, in the 31 Psalms, there are 31 Psalms that have one of those little historic markers that tell us what's going on in David's life. Either he's in the cave, or in the cave, or he's running from Absalom, or whatever he's doing. In all 31 Psalms, the Holy Spirit inspired David to write, during these greatest struggles, he says the same thing. "I love you, Lord. You're my rock. You're my fortress. You're my deliverer. I'm going to hold on to you." Remember my son? And he'd stick his arms out. David stuck his arms out to the Lord. That's what the Lord wants us. Starting in verse 1 of Psalm 18, and let me just point out some words in Hebrew that the Lord chose. David says this full-hearted expression to God, "I will love you, O Lord, my strength." The word love is the Hebrew word racham. It's a rare verb, and it's the choice of it is interesting. It's different than emotional love, you know, or admiration. I can say, "Boy, I really love my phone." But have you ever seen someone do this with their phone and hug it? That would be strange, wouldn't it? Maybe if you're trying to hold on to it so no one steals it. But how many people express love by hugging their phone? But if you have parents that you love, if you have a wife or a husband that you love, if you have a girlfriend or boyfriend that you love, it's unusual to not hug them. You understand? The word that David used in Psalm 18 is actually the word for embracing, hugging God. Have you gone in your life from just saying the word, "I love you, God," to thinking about the fact that you just want to put your arms around Him and hold on to Him? Do you remember at the resurrection in the garden tomb when Mary bumps into Jesus in the garden and realizes when he talks to her that it's him? What did she do? Anybody remember? She grabbed him. She put her arms around him. What did he say? You're going to have to let go of me. I've got to ascend to my Father. You see, true love is embracing love. And that's what David had for God. He couldn't get close enough. And by the way, Psalm 18 is the sole time in the Bible this term for hugging, embracing love was used by a person describing their love for God. Do you see why David is a man after God's own heart? Do you see why David is a man that's written about more? Even though David broke all 10 of the commandments, David ran toward God. Now, I don't know how your brothers and sisters are, if you even have brothers and sisters, but when our children were little, my wonderful wife, I worked long hours. I would go early in the morning, 5:30 or 6, to go disciple people, and a lot of times I wouldn't get home till supper at 6 p.m., so I was gone 12 hours. One time in church, my little 4-year-old daughter was in children's church at our church, and she was 4 years old, and they had prayer request time, and she raised her hand, and she said, "Please pray for my dad. He works on Sunday, and he doesn't come to church." I was the pastor of the church, but I left while she was sleeping. Went to the church. She was in the nursery and children's church, never saw me. Her mother took her to nursery and the children's church. Her mother fed her, dressed her, brought her to church, took her to children's church, took her to the nursery, put her in the car, and I came home for lunch after I did all three of the services. First service, Sunday school, second service. She never saw me in the building. "Please pray for my dad. He works on Sunday. He doesn't come to church." I didn't come to children's church. But isn't that interesting that when that happened, Bonnie realized that the kids didn't see me in the building. So she used to, between children's church and the nursery, she would get them in the hallway and hold on to him, and she'd say, "There's your dad, go get him." And through the crowds of people would come this little body running, and they would just vault off and grab me and just put their arms around me. And all the people would go, "Oh, that's so sweet." And then, you know, I'd see Bonnie and I'd tell him, "Okay, now go back to Mama. Right, there's Mama." But she wanted them to know what? That I went to church. But she didn't tell them to run, jump, and grab me. Why did they do that? That's this love. Do you have that kind of love for the Lord? Do you run toward Him? Or do you run toward entertainment, social media, games, music, movies? What is it that you hug close to you in life? See, that's the lesson David is challenging us with. What is it that is our love for God embracing love? Okay, number one, and we're going to just walk through each of these. God was the greatest attraction in David's life. Look what it says in verse 1. "I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength, my shield, my stronghold." Did you catch those "my's"? I actually have those circled in my Bible. I never want to read Psalm 18 without seeing that embracing love of the Lord. Do you know we need to be reminded? Remember the couple? The wife says, "Husband doesn't love me." The husband says, "She knows I love you." I said, "We can solve it right now. Just tell her right now." He goes, "No, she already knows it." See, there was a problem. The husbands do have trouble saying what they believe. And so I would get them to turn and face each other, hold hands, look each other in the eye, and say, "I love you." And usually the first time, the husband is really bad at it. I mean, if I was holding Bonnie's hand and said, I love you, do you think she would feel it? She would hear it. She wouldn't feel it. And so I'd say, let's try a little better. Act like you mean it, you know. And the husband would say, I love you. It's a forced smile. Finally, you know, well, I'll tell you one more. Let's see, do we have enough time? No, we don't have enough time. But Bonnie and I were called by a mission board to go to Mexico City. You know, Mexico City, it's as big as Manila. It's a city of over 20 million, just like Manila. Huge. We went to a group of church planners that worked all the way around Mexico City, in the villages. I mean, in the villages where the people slept in mud-floored huts, where they cooked their food outdoors over a fire, where they basically slept in hammocks. They didn't even have rooms. They slept in hammocks strung from the ceiling. And these church planners were there and working hard. But what happened is they spent all their time evangelizing out in the jungle, and they were starting to have marriage problems because they never saw each other. The wife was off doing children's ministry in the square. The husband was walking between huts, and they would leave in the morning, come back at night. And basically, the mission called us and said, none of the children of the church planters are becoming Christians because they never are around their parents, and they're not close to their parents, and their parents aren't close to each other. And they said, could you come and challenge them? I said, oh, we'd love to come and challenge them. So Bonnie and I went there, and I, through a translator, can you imagine, through a translator, look how fast I'm talking. When you have a translator, you can only say one sentence at a time. And you pause. And one sentence at a time. And you pause. And so here I was standing with my translator. Here are all the 250 church planners. And I said, okay, we're going to practice loving one another as couples. It was 250 married couples. Husbands and wives. Some of them had been married 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And I said, okay, so I'd like all of you to stand up. That was what I said in English. The translator looked at me and said, you're asking them to stand up? He's the translator. I said, mm-hmm. And he said to me in English, right now? I said, mm-hmm. He said, here? Could you tell he didn't want to say it? He was resisting. He said, Mexican people don't do what you're going to ask them to do. He told me that in English. I said, what do you mean? He said, Mexican men are macho. He said, they're not going to look at their wives and hold their hands and look into their eyes like you do with your wife. He said, they won't do it. So he was resisting. So I went like this. And to the crowd. So they kind of figured out. They all stood up. And I went, face each other. So I'm doing sign language. So now we've got 250 couples standing like this, looking at me, not knowing what they're supposed to do. And the translator said, okay, I'll translate for you. I said, tell them to hold hands. I said, have the husband look into the eyes of his wife. And repeat, and I started reading what it says in Ephesians 5. Husbands are supposed to love their wife as Jesus Christ loves each of us. So I said, look into your wife's eyes and say, I will love you like Jesus Christ loves you. Oh boy, was that a moment. That's this embracing, attracting love that David had for God. And it was men, macho. Do you know what macho is? Is that a word, you know, in the Philippines? You know, big tough guy, weightlifter, you know, like that. These women were standing there with their husband of 5, 10, 20, 30 years holding their hands. The lights were bright lights that shine down like this. They weren't fluorescent lights like these are. They were can lights. And can lights shine down like this. So a lot of women had lights over their heads where the light was kind of illumining their face. And here I am standing in this auditorium with all these couples holding hands, and you could see sparkling little lines coming down women's faces. What do you think they were doing? Crying. As soon as the break came, they ran to Bonnie. I'll never forget, a crowd of women ran up to Bonnie and they looked at her and they said, "My husband has never said anything like that to me in our entire marriage. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. And one of the women said, "I don't care if he meant it or not. I just can't believe he said it to me." And she just cried and cried and cried. Did you know if a human being gets a big charge out of another human being holding their hand and saying, "I love you," how much more does God want us to reach out and say, "I love you so much. If I could, I would hug you right now." Do you see why David was a man after God's own heart? That's how he was. Part 2, in verses 4 through 6, David says, "The pangs of death have surrounded me," verse 4. "The floods of ungodliness made me afraid." He says, "I've loved you even through desperate conditions." That's a good time to love the Lord. Look at verse 7. David says, "You can shake the earth. You can quake the foundations. You can," verse 9, "bow the heavens. You ride on a chariot on the wings of the wind." David is describing God's power as awesome. You know what he's saying? Just like those Mexican men were macho, God, David was saying, "God, you're powerful. I admire you." Did you know where you turn when you have problems shows who you admire? Many people can't leave home without their phone because they're just afraid not to be able to call someone for help. I say, wait a minute. Who's in the car with you all the time? God. Do you cry out to Him for help? Do you ask Him to help you? Do you seek the Lord as much as you seek on or emergency services or whoever you call? Part 4, God is just in everything He does. Verse 28, look what it says. "You will light my lamp. The Lord will enlighten my darkness." It's me who doesn't understand what's going on, not God. God knows what's best. God is working all things. Have you guys memorized Romans 8:28 yet? And we know that God works all things together. What? For good to those who what? Love Him. It's that embracing. See, the God is just in all He does. And what He wants us to do is to trust Him. To say, "You know more than I know. You see everything. You're doing it, working everything together for good." David could have said, "How come you let me grow up in a family where my dad and brothers didn't like me and they left me over there taking care of sheep?" David didn't do that. He didn't say, "God, you don't know what you're doing." David said, "You knew what you were doing and I sought you in the fields." That's what he says in Psalm 132. When his family abandoned him to work all the time, David sought God. That's what he said. Everything God has done is just. By the way, do you think God is wise in the family He put you in? Have you ever thought about that? Did you pick your parents? Absolutely not. Did they pick you? No, they did not. Unless you're adopted. If you're adopted, if your parents went to a orphanage and said, "I want that one," then that's great. They love you. They picked you. I didn't pick my children. My children didn't pick me. God picked the children to go into my home. God picked my parents. My parents. He picked them. I didn't. He also picked that I would be born in their family. And basically, you have all the characteristics of your parents, whether you know them or not. God picked all those unchangeable parts of your life. By the way, David writes about that in Psalm 139. He does a lot of writing. Okay, next. God conquered all of our enemies. In verse 37, I have pursued my enemies and overtaken them and didn't turn back till they were destroyed. But what he said is, verse 39, you're the one that strengthened me for the battle. You subdued those who rose up against me. Do you catch who really won the wars? Do you know why David was never defeated in battle? Because he never fought the battle the Lord did. Do you catch that? You see, David walked out toward Goliath, and if he hadn't done the slingshot, Goliath would have died somehow anyway. You know, a meteorite would have hit him, or lightning would have hit him, or something. How do I know that? Because it's God that was fighting for David. Sometimes God sent thunder. Sometimes God shook the earth. Sometimes God would put confusion among the enemies, and they would turn on each other and kill each other with their own swords. But what David said is, I'm not a big military hero. God, you are the one that won the battle. There was a missionary. Have you heard of the missionary or the servant of the Lord named George Mueller? Have you all heard of him? The man with the orphanages? How many of you have heard of him? Kind of? Yeah. Again, your library has all these great books. George Mueller was a man who lived in 1804, about the time of Napoleon in Europe. And he lived until about the end of the 1800s. He lived to be 90-some years old. And he opened homes for orphans. But he never asked anybody for money. He never said, could you donate to my orphanage? He prayed. All he did is pray. There came a time when he had 5,000 children in his buildings. He had them all sit at their tables for breakfast, and there was no food in the kitchen. Nothing. No milk, no bread. And George Mueller told the staff, go ahead and get all the kids to sit down. They said, why? It'll make them hungrier. They'll be sad. He said, the Lord will provide. And while they were being seated, they could hear the sound of wagons coming. And one of the men in the city, Bristol, where this happened in England, said he couldn't sleep. He got his bakers to work all night long. He went out to the farmers and woke them up and got wagons of milk. He said, I don't even know why, but I just feel I should go today. And he came rumbling up just in time to serve 5,000 orphans the freshest breakfast they'd ever had. George Mueller became renowned through the world not because he bragged about himself. It's because all those orphans grew up in his orphanage and they started going out and telling people. They said, you know what? This man prays. Did you know George Mueller read the Bible 100 times sitting at his desk? And then he started thinking about it and said, you know what? God is so great, he's worthy of more than me sitting in front of him. So he read it the second 100 times on his knees. In his lifetime, he read the Bible 200 times. I've seen his Bible. Bonnie took me there to his home in Bristol. And his 200-year-old Bible is in a case with glass around it. And there's not a page that doesn't have his tiny, beautiful handwriting where he underlined verses and wrote kind of what you're doing in your devotional projects, wrote what he found out about the Lord. This man said, God conquered all of my enemies, just like David did, and God used him greatly. Well, starting in verse 46, the Lord lives, blessed be my rock. Look at this. Let the God of, what does your Bible say in verse 46? The God of what? My what? Yeah, my God, but what does it say? Let the God of my what? Salvation. Do you understand the difference between David and Saul? When Saul talked to Samuel, you know what he said to Samuel? Talk to the Lord your God. It's one of the most interesting. That's in 1 Samuel 15. Remember the Agag and all that stuff we covered last week? Did you catch the difference? Samuel, it was Samuel's God to Saul. He said, go talk to your God. Who was the Lord to David? My God. My salvation. My rock. The Lord for us to say, all my life, as long as I live, I'm going to proclaim you are God. Okay, real quickly, we need to seek God even when we're imperfect. Was David fearless? No. Was he perfect? No. In fact, I'll try it again. If I say to you, David and, you'll either think of Goliath or Bathsheba. Right? Isn't it interesting? We always think both of his highlight, Goliath, and his low moment, Bathsheba. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have a perfect marriage. Did you know that basically the only wife it seems David got along with for the whole length of their marriage is Bathsheba? The rest of them, I mean, Michael didn't want anything to do with him, and the rest of them we hardly even hear about. He doesn't even talk about. It's just like they had children, and they're out there. But he, to the end, loved Bathsheba. Did you know you don't have to have a perfect marriage to please God? You don't have to have perfect children. By the way, did any of David's children turn out? Would any of you want to have his children? They're killing each other. They're raping each other. They're trying to kill David. Solomon is worshiping false idols. Solomon married all these foreign wives, and every foreign wife brought her idol in to the city of Jerusalem. You don't have to have perfect children. And you don't have to be constantly serene. Was David serene? No. Basically, what we should do is what it says in Hebrews 11:6, and realize that God is a God that rewards those that diligently seek Him. That's how we please God. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Hebrews 11:6. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Now, here's my question. Do you diligently seek the Lord? Really? You know what some of you think? I'm in school. I'm in the institute. You know, I just have to do all this work. And so you do the work. But you don't realize that on the other side of your notes, on the other side of your studies, is a God with his arms out. And he wants you to hug him. He wants you to race toward him. He wants you sometimes during study hall, now don't do it out loud, but just while you're studying away, look up and say, I love you, God. I mean, if I wasn't in study hall and wasn't supposed to be quiet, I would hug you. I love you so much. See, that's what David was like. Psalm 18 is kind of like the investment record recorded by God of David's investments. That's why it's the longest psalm. David said, I've spent my whole life investing in you. It's how did he invest in God? As a shepherd boy, he trusted God when he faced wolves and lions. When he was a little boy, he trusted God when he faced Goliath. As King Saul's son-in-law, he trusted God as he fought the Philistines. When he became king, he trusted God when he faced all the armies. David responded to our great God by embracing him. And that's my challenge to you. Embrace God all of your days. Let's have a good break, and we'll be back.